Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, in the audience and on TV land. This is the regular meeting Thursday, March 3rd, 2016, of the Harbor Advisory Board. Welcome. We have a quorum, and right now I'd like to have a moment of silence, please. And Dana, would you lead us for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Okay. This is the time where we have announcements from the board, and I'll start at Jean, your end.
Well, if you don't have your boat tied up securely, it's almost too late. That's about it.
Alan?
Yes, the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization had its annual meeting on the 28th of February. And at that meeting, we collectively decided that we wanted to take a stand on the issue of the boats on trailers not being allowed on private property unless they're screened. We feel that, especially in the case of commercial fishermen, that it would be awfully nice if that ordinance could be rescinded, since the city is now enforcing the code, which it hasn't for many years. We have a lot of fishermen who fish small boats on trailers, and a lot of the lots in the town are small, and there's really no way you can get it off the street, but you can't really get it out of view. And we'd like to see the city make an adjustment on that. Thank you.
Lynn? I have an announcement. The Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department has purchased a new lifeguard, junior lifeguard trailer. What we're going to do, and we're going to try this out, is rent it for the 6 months, and so we're going to be able to move it to various events, and we're going to see how that goes. So we made a commitment to rent that for the next 7 months. So look for a new container out there at the Rock. Neil? Dana?
Yes, I have two items. The Morro Bay Yacht Club will be hosting a couple sailing regattas. One of them is the Mustang Regatta, which is this weekend. It's Cal Poly, and they have a dozen schools in California. I don't think anywhere else coming. So that should be fun in the rain, pouring down. I'm going to be on a safety boat, Mark's up boat, so I'm looking forward to that. And so that's Saturday and Sunday. If you look out there and you see a bunch of small boats, that's them, collegiate sailing in Morro Bay. And then next weekend, they're back-to-back, we have the Big Rock Regatta, which is your younger kids in a bathtub-looking boat, and which is actually the largest fleet in the world of youth sailing class. And we have typically had one of the biggest of the series. It's a Southern California series, and being the most northerly, people come up here and visit, and they just go, oh, my gosh, we didn't know this was here. And so the parents of these other yacht clubs are very anxious to come up here for this event where they may not be so much for other events. So that will be the following weekend, the 12th and 13th. That will be our 10th annual. And that will be it for me.
Okay, Ron?
Nothing, thank you.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to rearrange the schedule. For the people that are in the audience, I'd like to actually move item number C5, C6, and C7 as the next business items, and then we'll go back to our regular agenda. Does anyone have an issue with that? Okay, so that's what we're going to do. And so at this point in time, we want to go to item number C5. Oh, I'm sorry. Public comment first. Now, the public comment is on anything that we're not going to discuss, so... I thought... Okay. I do apologize. I thought I could go back to A1 after we do this, but maybe not. So let's take a look at A1, and if everyone had a chance to look at the minutes from February 4th, 2016, please.
I'm confused. What happened to public comment?
Yeah, normal public comment. Item's not on the agenda, and then consent calendar. Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, public comment is next before we, at least in my agenda right here, before we approve the minutes. So right at this point in time, we would like to have...
Well, that's what mine says.
That's what mine says. So I'd like to have public comment to anyone who would like to come up and discuss something that's not on the agenda.
Can I make public comment on something that's on the agenda if I have to pick my child up in 7 minutes?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So then thank you for that. First of all, my name is Joan Solu, and I'd like to thank all of you for volunteering. I recognize that's a volunteer position up there. And you have an interesting topic, C6, public restrooms, something people usually don't like to talk about. We like to know that a bathroom exists in our world, but we don't like to see it, discuss it, or really, you know... put it in the foreground. A good example of that is an event. When you walk into the Kite Festival or the Harbor Festival, the first thing you want to see is somebody greeting you, taking your ticket, welcoming you warmly. You don't want to see the public restroom right at the gate, right? So let's talk a little bit about public restrooms. I'm in the unique position to have had been on Recreation and Parks Commission for a number of years, and I would say that having had 4 sons who grew up in this town and having had 3 of them be under 5 years old at one point, all bunched up together, I have seen the inside of all of our public restrooms in town. I am aware that there's about 9 public restrooms between The Rock and Tidelands Park, and I'm also in the unique position of owning a business along the Embarcadero, which is a tourism-related business. And many, many times we provide hospitality services in the form of lodging. Many, many times I have, since July, when we began to own that business, there is a consistent flow of traffic that walk in and they ask us for this. Do you have a clean restroom we can use? They're not asking us for a restroom because there's plenty of restrooms between The Rock and Tidelands Park. What they're asking us for is a clean, hospitable, well-stocked restroom without waste receptacles that overflow, with a changing station, something that might be modernized, at least in our century. We're about headed into 20 years into our century here, very near. And we haven't modernized our restrooms or our design of our restrooms in probably 25 years. It would be nice for quality of life for residents, to not walk into a restroom and have everything be hardscape. I know from being in the hospitality industry and having seen restrooms intimately for the last 25 years that there is only, and I'm going to be blunt, there is only so much urine and other human waste that you can clean up before it begins to impact the substructure of the restroom floor, right? And that's the point where we're at with many of our restrooms. What we really need is not more restrooms. What we really need to do is redesign our restrooms to be welcoming, to provide a quality of life that we all deserve. This is not something that needs to take millions of dollars. We don't necessarily have to tear down the restrooms, but what we do have to do is re-examine what we're doing, how we're maintaining them, and what we can do to update them and bring them into this century. Certainly, I'm happy to help provide people with a clean, welcome restroom, and I hope that as a resident, we can also provide that type of product in the near future. Thank you.
Thanks, Joan. Okay, is there anyone else for public comment of items that are not on the agenda? So, seeing none, I guess my procedural concept. I thought we were going to go straight on to C5, but I guess we have to approve the minutes first. Is that correct, Polly? Okay. So if we could take a look at the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board on February 4th, 2016. And I entertain Dana.
Well, agenda.
I'm sorry. This is not exactly the minutes, but it comes from the minutes. It is, and I look at our agenda up at the top, regular meeting Thursday, March 3rd. It has me as vice chair. I am not vice chair. That would be this gentleman, Ron Reisner, next to me.
Okay. So noted. Polly?
That would be for that.
First page, regular meeting Thursday, March 3rd, 2016. We just need to put the vice chair beside Ron Reisner. Polly? Dana?
On today's agenda.
On today's agenda.
You're talking about on the agenda, not on the minutes itself. Okay.
Okay, you have it? Okay.
Yeah, we need to change that.
If you can make that correction.
Yeah, sorry, that's a template remnant from the change we just did.
It's okay. Okay, anyone would like to approve the minutes?
I'd move to approve the minutes.
Okay, Neil, I hear a second.
Second.
Okay, and I have Lynn as the second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, thank you. So the minutes have been approved. Now, I would like to skip to the C. Can I do that first, Eric?
Yeah, with consent of the board, which I think you already got, moving
okay.
things around.
All right, so right now we want to move to C5, which is the request by Thomas St. John for a waiver of requirement to qualify for a commercial fishing slip. So, Eric?
All right, thank you. So, try to be fairly brief. We've got a fair number of things on the agenda, but you've seen a couple of these before. Thomas St. John, one of our commercial fishermen in one of our slips, had a couple of bad years here with personal things and fishing seasons going kind of south over the last few years. He's used his two waivers, his two normal waivers. He get 2 and 10 years. He's now come to the Harbor Advisory Board for kind of a final waiver per the resolution 2391. He provided, actually got really close on his fish tickets, but it wasn't quite there, which is unfortunate. But he's now appealing to the Harbor Advisory Board. He gave it to us in writing. You have the attachment to your staff report. Bringing it back to the Harbor Advisory Board and recommending that you hear his appeal and act accordingly.
Okay. Mr. St. John, would you like to come up?
Hello.
And your name, please?
My name's Tom St. John.
Okay.
And I appreciate this opportunity to speak my part. I've been doing this. I'm a third-generation fisherman out of this area, Avila, Morro Bay. And I've talked my grandson into not doing it. And I like it. And I got my first license in 1962, and except for Vietnam and going to Cal Poly, I've been fishing, and I've never ever had an issue about making the right amount of money. Never used to have to. You just made more. And I only have two permits, one salmon and one's crab. And this was the shortest salmon season. The only time it was shorter was in 2008 when they closed it, this side of Big Sur. And so I couldn't crab. So that kind of, I was 200 and I fished almost every day salmon season. There just weren't fish around here. I'm raising my granddaughter, so I couldn't travel elsewhere. But I was $268.70 short on the amount, which I didn't know until I was doing my taxes. So I'd like to, I think I can still fish a couple more years. And when I'm not in my slip, I'm always letting the harbor know that it's available to rent out. so it's not like I'm wasting the space, and I'd just like to have another shot at it. The reason I used my waivers before is because my wife was ill, but I've never had an issue of not being able to catch the amount of fish, so that's why I'm here, and I sure appreciate you letting me do this.
Okay. So I'd like to, do we have any questions toward Mr. Thomas St. John? Ron?
Mr. St. John, forgive me for asking questions which are actually your business, but under the circumstances, I need to. I understand you to say that you'd like to do it for another couple of years. Can you be a little more definitive about that?
Well, I don't know how long I'm going to live, but I want to do it till the rest of my life.
Okay,
that's capable.
That's pretty definitive. Thank you. And the condition of your boat, sir?
It's excellent. I've always had good boats. I take good care of them. I've never had any citations from the Fish and Game. I've never had a citation from the Coast Guard. I keep everything up to date, and I always pay my bills.
And lastly, if there is a California Dungeness crab fishery in the next season, is it your intention to participate in it?
No.
Okay.
Because I have a southern rock crab permit, also closed. And there's only like 60 of those in the state. But it's always something I can rely on if I want to work hard and not make much money.
Yeah.
But I can usually make it through the year. But yeah. I wasn't able to this year.
Okay. All right, and I know you already said this, but just to be clear for us, it is your intention to participate in the upcoming salmon season.
Absolutely. I it's my favorite thing to do, and I've been doing it a long time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Dana? I'm good. Neil?
You already answered my question, so we're good.
I have none. Lynn?
Sorry. In your letter, it says that you are now a single parent who could take your boat to another area.
I'll explain that. My granddaughter, who lives with me, I'm her guardian, legal guardian. She's been with me since she was 4. She's going to graduate from high school this year. And that's what's limited me. When my wife was still with us, I could go fish the entire coast of California. But since she's been gone, I'm restricted to just this local area. But once she graduates, which is June 2nd, then I should be freed up.
Okay. Okay. So it's a temporary state. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a typo.
Alan? Do you have anything for Thomas? Okay.
No.
Gene?
Yeah, the Mary 1's a nice looking boat.
Oh. Thank you. I try to keep my boats that way.
Okay. Well, do I hear a motion to anyone to entertain a motion to Alan?
Yeah, I move that we allow him a waiver.
Okay, Alan?
I would second that.
And Dana seconds it. So do we have any discussion? I think in this case here, Ron?
The last time that this board granted a waiver, did we do it with some provision that the fishermen needed to be active in the fishery moving forward? I just can't recall.
Neil?
The last time we did this, there was a pending court case that we... Prior to that, then I'm out.
I thought, wasn't that the one prior was the gentleman who lived on his boat near you, Alan, I believe, and died on his boat just recently?
Yeah, I think he was denied, wasn't he?
I believe he was. Okay.
Before that was Dickie Sylvester.
Okay. But I think in this case here, I think you have a very valid excuse, and I see no reason why we shouldn't grant that. Matt?
Can we have a public comment?
Yeah, definitely. So, Lori, speak your name and.
Hi, I'm Lori French, and on behalf of Mr. St. John, I would like to mention that yes, we have some elderly. You're not elderly. Fishermen in this harbor that survive solely on salmon and crab. This salmon season, the reports had just came out like last night, and it's not looking very rosy for this year. And I haven't had a chance to read it, but please take that into consideration because I think you're going to be seeing more fishermen in the same predicament. I know our boat, we didn't make it last year, and if there's no salmon, we probably won't make it again this year. And we've been doing this a long time, just like Mr. St. John. So please consider this for fishermen. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Lori. Do I have any, Alan?
Yeah, I think what Lori was saying was that the idea of attaching provisions, that we may be sorry that we did that because that's what it looks like is going to happen, is that the next salmon season is going to be way subpar and the crab is unknown. I think we would do well to skip that step.
Okay. Neil?
I guess I have a question for Eric. In the event that there is a closure, either a crab closure, and if the salmon season doesn't exist, and a gentleman such as himself has only those two permits, how does the city act? Is there any exemptions during that get set into effect?
In the past, as you know, we had a couple of years where they had declared salmon disasters and we waived the requirement. Or actually didn't waive it. You could just bring your salmon permit and that would qualify you for a slip. It may go that way if things continue on with the crab season. And depending on how our conversation comes out here later, one potential path for the city to go down would be providing that fishermen that have crab permits can just produce their crab permit to qualify for their slip if it's such a bad season. If salmon season turns out the same way again this coming spring, we may be looking at something similar like that. So that is a possibility.
So in the event that you guys viewed this current crab closure, of which one of those permits is his, would you guys enact some kind of cancellation of the need for his requirement, and then this meeting right now would be... I know they get a certain amount. I'm just trying to see if we grant him this and you guys end up closing it anyway, is it going to count towards his allotted number of...
Well, you get two. You normally get two per any 10 years, and then per the resolution, it's 2391, it's sort of the last chance. You can get one-third one by appealing to the Harbor Advisory Board. There really is no other... Within that resolution, within our existing regulation, there's no other means to qualify. I mean, you don't have to have the fish landings. You can also do prove 90 days of fishing effort, which the resolution spells that out as well. It's a combination of fuel or fish receipts that show if you fish 90 days but just didn't catch anything, you can qualify that way as well. That's sort of an immutable fact that we can't get around. The really three waivers is what you can get. As I said, we've got a major problem going on with the crab fishery, both Rock and Dungeness. And as Lori French says, we may have not a very good salmon season coming up, and if we're facing the same sort of thing. So I think Mr. St. John, I think, is probably our last one left that's hanging out there. Everyone else has either used one of their waivers or qualified. So we're pretty well done for people keeping their slips for this year. It's going to be come December when it's time to produce fish tickets again that we're going to be facing this. So we'll have to be trying to get ahead of that ball and put something. It really takes something in front of the city council to them to approve some sort of a blanket waiver for having a certain permit or something.
So point of contention, Thomas St. John is just asking for a waiver, not a reduction in his fees or anything like that. He's continuing to pay those in good faith.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah,
okay.
It always has.
All right. Microphone.
If we do grant him a waiver, then and then we subsequently grant all crab fishermen a waiver, will this waiver be excused from his record then in that case? I mean, as far as his track record for the 10-year period and the two waivers, because it might be to his advantage to wait and see if he's going to be granted a waiver, you know, just as a matter of course without using up.
Well, that's pretty speculative at this point.
I see it on the agenda here, C7.
Yeah, but that'll eventually go to city council, and that could be a couple of months down the line. This is
a different thing. This is not a waiver.
We're in real time on this issue. This is a real time issue, not a what might happen.
Nobody else out there. I think this is the last one of all our fishermen in our slips. This is the last one that's still kind of hanging out there. Everyone else is taken care of.
Well, let me rephrase my question. Is it essential for him to get this waiver today? For us to decide.
I think to assuage, to address the, yes, to, in short, yes. I think to keep the slip under existing rules and regulations without speculating on what may happen or may not happen, yes. Certainly if we move forward with some sort of a blanket waiver like we did for the couple of salmon years and years past, we could look, and we're probably getting ahead of ourselves, but we're part of discussion on this item and it's germane, so I think we're okay. We could certainly entertain the idea of it being retroactive and undoing, you know, maybe somebody that had to use a waiver.
Fine.
Certainly a point of discussion. I won't say that would automatically happen, but that could be a idea moving forward into that. That make sense?
Thank you.
Gene?
If I'm correct, when we gave blanket waivers in the past and due to a poor salmon season, that was not considered one of the numbered waivers.
Correct. It wasn't. Yes. They didn't count against your count.
Okay. Any other questions or any comments here, folks? Do I have a motion here? Okay. And we have a second. Do I have any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Hearing none, you have your waiver, sir.
I want to thank you very much. Sorry I took so much of your time. You guys do good work. And I'm optimistic, always optimistic, so hopefully I won't be seeing you anymore.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep, that's it. So long.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you now. Okay, so the next thing on the agenda will be C6, which is the discussion and recommendations on the condition of restrooms on the Embarcadero. And Eric?
Yeah, thank you again, Sully. Going out of order here, you're throwing me off. Yes. Okay, so this is from a future agenda item from back in November. I think we heard some public comment about the condition of our restrooms, a little similar to maybe what we heard earlier tonight. Primarily centered on the inadequacy of the cleaning, which could be a result of use and demand as well as construction. Had several comments proffered from the public at that time, maybe contracting out the cleaning, looking at the cost allocation, making sure we're getting what we're paid for, and maybe doing some redesign to make the restrooms a little more user-friendly. So we declared a future agenda item back in November, just getting back to the agenda here now. What we're really seeking is further public comment, and it looks like we will receive some, and then Harbor Advisory Board discussion. I know I received a few emails from some board members over the last couple of days, picking my brain a little bit on how often the restrooms are clean and whatnot. So pretty much just an open discussion here on ideas and recommendations on how to make the restroom situation better. Obviously, throwing more people at it and more cleaning at it is one fairly simple way of looking at it, but may not be the only way. So. With that, I will turn it back to the board.
Okay. So, do we have any public comment on this?
My name is Tina Hoppe, and I live here in Morro Bay. And in November, I think I brought the topic up as we were just finishing our long days, and the summer use of the toilets was absolutely unacceptable with no services, as it's toxic. It has hazmat material, it's unsanitary, would not meet health inspection, does not bring tourists back into our area, a lot of problems, not to mention when the toilets are unusable, one should ask themselves, Where does one go? Morrow Bay should be concerned with that. I know as a business owner on the Embarcadero since 1989, I had Hoppies at 901, Hoppies at Pocket, and I'm still involved with Windows on the Water. It's very important to the tourism, to the businesses to be successful. All of you are aware that we're sitting on harbor contracts on the Embarcadero, which makes money for the city. For us to make money allows us to pay the city. We really need tourism in this area for all of us to be successful. I've just never seen anything so filthy in all of my travels around the world. Third world countries, I have not seen what I have seen in the bathrooms of Morro Bay. That's just sad. There has to be a solution. If it's close the bathroom and bring in outhouses, I haven't even seen an outhouse to the level of what I have seen on the Embarcadero. That's the two bathrooms by the Rock and by Tognazzini's. And I'm pretty sure that Dockside Tognazzini's is the public bathroom for that restroom as well, which doesn't even have a soap dispenser. That does not meet a health inspector. So there are issues that it really does need to have a solution. I don't know if I need to stand there and collect signatures or what I need to do to get this accomplished. I would love to hear it, but something needs to be done. I'm more than willing. I know as a restaurant owner and running wineries, we have to mandate those restrooms hourly. You go to grocery stores or you go to Walmart or any of the department stores, they have clipboards that show the timings that those restrooms have been cleaned and maintained. At the end of the day right now, I believe that the bathrooms get opened up and they get closed up with no maintenance in between. The person who closes up at 5 o'clock, I'm sure the city doesn't have them trained under hazmat material. That should be concerned for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Me again. Do I still have to state my name? Okay, Lori French. I'm going to agree with Tina. Being a fisherman's wife, I travel with my husband up and down the coast, and I see a lot of the bathrooms in a lot of the harbors. And Morro Bay is probably at the bottom of the scale. It really is. There are not like when our bathrooms are worse than a gas station bathroom, that's not a good thing. But thank you. That's all.
Thank you. State your name, please.
My name is Homer Alexander. Late on Sunday afternoon, February 14th, I tried to use the bathroom next to the harbor office. It was so disgusting that I continued walking to the bathroom at Coleman Park. It was not great, but at least I didn't think I was going to catch something. I realized that because of the two back-to-back holidays, coupled with great weather, there were a lot of people on the waterfront that day. However, I don't think that that should be an excuse for the way our city treats its guests. Keep in mind that all those additional folks are producing revenue for both the Harbor Fund and the General Fund. I would like to see your board recommend to the city staff they hire a part-time janitor to work every weekend during the summer, plus a few key weekends during the rest of the year. This individual's responsibility would be to keep the city's 6 waterfront restrooms clean. He or she would also be sure that the trash cans were not overflowing. This part-time employee would be in addition to the city's existing waterfront maintenance personnel. The annual cost of this individual to perform these functions would be less than $5,000 a year. In the past, our city leaders have used the excuse their inability to keep the waterfront restrooms clean was due to lack of resources. Considering that the harbor operating budget is $1.8 million and the city's general fund budget is $12 million, common sense would indicate that finding $5,000 to improve the experience for the folks who generate 40% of the city's revenue would be a no-brainer. Finally, wouldn't this be a good time for your board to reconsider the idea of giving the Coast Guard the existing harbor office space and building a modern bathroom complex that would be easier to keep clean with an efficient harbor office on the second floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Hearing no one else, let's take this back to the board here. Yes.
Hi, I'm Sandy Twist. I have a business on the Embarcadero. And as a subleasee of a leasor, we have to take care of a public bathroom. We have to pay for all the utilities, all the maintenance, flushed baby diapers, whatnot, all the cleaning, all the supplies, and any maintenance that has to be done to it. I'm a small business, and I'm on 575 Embarcadero. And what I've seen in my short time that I've been on the Embarcadero since August is lines of people, 15, 20 people deep, wanting to use our bathroom because we have this beautiful plaque and it says public restroom. It is clean. I take great pride in it because I like using a clean bathroom, but it doesn't always get left clean. And so I'm a little bit concerned, especially since I have to do all the maintenance. I took my walk through the Embarcadero today, and pretty much every building I took pictures has a public bathroom because that's the new law, rule, whatever. And the signage is ridiculous. I mean, we're talking this big of a sign for a public bathroom. My sign is huge. So by the time people walk from north to south, they have to go really bad. They're really angry. And I've actually lost customers because they come into my shop rude, demanding a key for their right to use the bathroom. So I think part of the problem is the Embarcadero, the waterfront. The bathrooms that are on there should be better publicized for people. I didn't go inside to see the cleanliness of them, but I imagine if they have to take care of them and maintain them and supply them, that they probably just feel like, why should we have to do it for a city bathroom? So that's something to consider is the signage. Even the big one in the middle, the sign is this big for this huge three-stall per gender bathroom. So I think this is a problem if we want to serve our visitors who are creating revenue for us.
Excuse me, where is your restroom, if I may ask? What business do you have?
The paddleboard company. We're down across from the shell shop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening, too, is there's a driveway that goes to condos that are there or vacation rentals, and it's got nice benches, and because people are 15 people deep, they smoke their cigarettes, they hang out. It's not a park. And the people are trying to get in, it's becoming a real problem. And this summer it's going to really be, I mean, I've seen it just Valentine's Day, the great weather. You know, you have this herd of people. And they don't even realize that there's, by the chessboard, that there's a bathroom. Because they're walking on the business's side, and the sign is this big. You literally cannot read the sign when you're on the other side. Something to consider.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, so we're going to bring it back to the board here and discuss it. Ron, would you like to add some comments or discuss any concerns that you may have?
Well, in public comment this evening on this agenda item, we've heard three pretty profound points in no particular order. That there may be inadequate signage directing people to city restrooms, city, not privately maintained restrooms that are designated under lease purposes for public use. We also heard the concept of the city engaging a part-time individual to augment public works maintenance activities in the city bathrooms. We also heard that signage of privately maintained restrooms designated for public use, which are embedded in a variety of the leased properties, may be inadequate. Insofar as the condition of the bathrooms is concerned, I have to believe that everybody that pays any attention knows that there are significant periods of time when they're not acceptable. Seeing this on the agenda, in the last 2 weeks, I have been in each of the city waterfront bathrooms twice each, once in the morning, once in the afternoon, on both a weekday and on a weekend. As Mr. Alexander pointed out, the city is enjoying, and this is a really good thing, the city is enjoying considerable tourist traffic, not just during peak times. Any of us that live here know that there are lots of folks here, lots of the time. And as Mr. Alexander pointed out, they are generating revenue. So I think that it is incumbent upon the city to think in terms of these basic human needs that make not only the residents more comfortable, but make the city more attractive, or as attractive as possible in this particular regard, to tourists. Part of our packet this evening, our agenda packet, includes a memorandum for City Council staff and public dated February 24, 2016 from City Hall. The subject is 2016-2017 City Goals and Objectives. So I looked through this to see if there was some opportunity in the established and approved, now approved, 2016-17 City Goals and Objectives. Bear in mind now, this isn't today. This doesn't start until the beginning of, you know, fiscal 2016, which is the middle part of this year, in the middle of the summer. But looking at goal number 3, sub E, Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan, consider incorporating the Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan into the GPLC process, complete the Downtown Waterfront Strategic Plan part of the plan. I have no idea what the current status of that is, but complete seems to imply that it's a work in progress. So I choose to believe that an opportunity for the topic that's in front of us tonight exists relative to goal 3 sub E. Additionally, because this is what drives the budget, right? This is what drives the budget, theoretically. So goal 7, sub J, facility maintenance program. Update the facility maintenance program using priority setting in time to influence the 2017-2018 budget cycle. Well, that's 2 years out. That doesn't really help us, but there's something there. So that's a lot of words to say that something's got to happen with this, folks. Something's got to be done, and I don't really know what this board could do other than to make some sort of specific recommendation to the City Council, which I think is abundantly aware of this topic. What hasn't happened that we know of, or at least that I know of, I won't speak the rest of you, what hasn't happened to my knowledge is that the city has recognized the problem by addressing it with resources, additional resources. It's my understanding that these bathrooms, which are open 24/7, 365, are cleaned once a day at around 5 o'clock. So clearly, on a busy day in town, there is ample opportunity, setting aside the issues of folks of questionable mental health who sometimes have problems in there. Setting that aside, there's ample opportunity on a heavy day, heavy usage day, for them to get really nasty before 5 o'clock.
Dana?
Well, obviously we have a problem here. It's not the first time we've heard it. I'm just somewhat curious. I know this is on the waterfront, but I know that Public Works, the guys come in clean. I know the one down by Tidelands. I'm assuming they do all the rest of them, out at the Rock and everywhere else. So I don't understand. Part of me is kind of why is this coming to our board and not PWAB? But obviously the city needs to take care of this. If they keep coming up with this excuse that they don't have the funds, well, maybe instead of getting all these code enforcement officers, they could put some money towards taking care of the bathrooms. That's my two cents.
Neil?
Some comments were made earlier by Joan Solu that were interesting. Right now, my building, I'm currently doing some construction on, and I had my water turned off, so I've been using the public restroom near the dockside, and I bring my own soap. And I don't think many people have that luxury to carry around their soap. So just upgrading facilities, I find it a simple concept and necessary. I think increased cleaning is great, but at the end of the day, after you clean it all and what you're left with, the blank slate, isn't enough. You know, you're not just cleaning it. It's not going to add a soap dispenser. There's something that needs to be done, and if it's looking at the fund, and I don't know if it's something the Harbor Department wants to manage, and if so, maybe we get some of those funds back from the fund and take care of it, whether that be hiring another employee or subcontracting that work out. I think increasing the cleaning schedule is a necessity, but also some sort of updates need to occur. I'm not familiar with the California code for bathrooms, whether, you know, soap dispensers, I assume, are required, but not sure of that. And changing stations, it seems to be another necessity for bathrooms, male and female. So I don't. That's my contribution to the conversation, I guess, for now.
Well, thank you, Neil. I think Dana brought up an interesting point. Why is this brought here to the Harbor Board? Well, apparently it hasn't been resolved or nothing's been done by bringing it to any other matters. Homer came up with one solution, and I will basically, I actually am the president of the Morro Bay Friends of the Harbor Department, and we will donate $5,000 to hire a part-time person to clean the restrooms. And under the guise of the Harbor Department, if that is going to be one part of the solution, to start at least some activity on it. So that is a temporary solution, but I'm willing to make that comment and that donation and see if we can actually get the city to also contribute some resources. I mean, as Neil said, if they don't have a soap dispenser, I think that's against the law. So, I mean, that should be taken care of immediately. But if the city and the Public Works do not want to fix this, I think the Harbor should, you know, I mean, I'll talk to Eric, and maybe we can hire a part-time person to work, as Ron said, on the weekends, to make sure that at least we can try to clean it on a temporary solution. Now, I think that there should be some type of remodeling, tiling, to try to upgrade it, but that's, you know, I mean, that's beyond my capabilities or jurisdiction. But I think that the Friends are willing to make that commitment to the city, to the tourism, because they are filthy. There's no question about it. The only good restroom is the one over there next to the power plant. That is a beautiful restroom. I don't think too many people know about it, and I think you brought up a very interesting point. If we provide a little bit more signage, The restrooms on at the Marina Square, probably half the people that walk down there don't know that they exist. And those are okay restrooms. But the point being is that I think that we can at least come with some temporary solution, and so I'm willing to make that commitment if you'd like to take me up on that offer, Eric. Lynn?
I think this is the most basic of services that the city can provide and ought to provide. As generous as the offer would be from the Friends of the Harbor Department, I don't really think that's an appropriate solution. The City Council or Public Works, whoever is in charge of maintaining the cleanliness, needs to shift funds from wherever it might come from to immediately have more employees servicing the restrooms as needed.
Alan?
I agree with all of these things. I feel that the bathrooms are a benchmark of the level your civilization has risen to. And if that's the case, we're falling very short here. I think we can do better. I think it would be in the city's interest to make this a priority in their goals, to try and give the tourist an experience that they will remember pleasantly in all aspects, because it can only hurt if they go away thinking that they had to use truly substandard bathrooms. I feel strongly about bathrooms.
Gene?
As I understand it, all the funding for repairing cleaning the bathrooms comes from Public Works. Is that correct, Eric? Or does the Harbor Department reimburse some of that?
No, it all. Well, the general funding to take care of the restrooms, maintenance and cleaning, including pieces and parts and new toilets and that and whatnot, all comes from the cost allocation, which is a set dollar amount per year it raises with the CPI. Once in a while, when bigger ticket items come up that isn't in facilities, I shouldn't say recreation parks, I say R&P, used to be R&P, facilities. If it's not in the facilities budget to do something larger, like I think the when we had to swap out the water heaters in there, we put in flash heaters, that came from our budget. But general maintenance and repair and cleaning and servicing, that all comes from our budget through the cost allocation.
Okay. And then a comment on new construction on the waterfront. There are minimum sign dimensions that have to be used, and I believe they're 18 by 24, with so much size for the font and things like that. I would think that the city itself should at least have signage that directs traffic to where they need to go. And we need to make a recommendation to the council to direct funding towards that, repairing and maintaining the bathrooms.
I agree. And you know, you're right, Lynn. I mean, I don't think it's appropriate for the Friends to do it, but if this is something that is a temporary solution, because they are horrible and there has been nothing done. There's been a lot of talk. So I don't know what else to do. I mean, you've got to have some action now. Is it, so I'd like to start the discussion. That was my only content here. Yes, Ron.
I'd like to make a motion and would respectfully suggest that the Friends, if the motion passes, that the Friends could monitor what happens after that motion, because it embedded in is a 30-day period of time. So I'd like to move to recommend that the City Council, within the next 30 days, direct additional city resources toward timely maintenance of the city's waterfront restrooms, as well as toward physical improvements of city waterfront restrooms. Additionally, recommend improved signage for both city waterfront restrooms and leasehold restrooms designated for public use.
I have a motion on the table. Do I hear a second? Alan? So Ron has made a motion. Alan has seconded it. And any discussion? Gene?
The only concern I would have is requiring leaseholders to revise their signs because they already have an agreement with the city, with their businesses. So I don't know how you add a condition to their lease. That would have to be up to Eric to do.
The motion was for improved, whatever that might mean. And if that means that they have to comply with their existing lease requirements and they're not, then that would seem to be, if that's your point, would seem to come under that notion of improvement. How would you like the motion?
I don't know how you can make somebody, a private business, add a new condition to their lease.
You would have to, unless Eric's got an answer already, it was sign ordinance.
Eric?
So I won't say all, but I'm pretty sure the majority, if not all, of our leases, that not all the leases have that public restroom requirement.
Correct.
There, many of them are going that way. A lot of them do. But most of them, if not all, the language is such that the signage shall provide adequate signage as determined by or approved by the harbor director. So it's in their lease that they've got to have it, and we can dictate to them whether it's adequate or not. So
Okay.
You okay with the motion?
Yeah.
All right, any other discussion on the motion on the table? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. We have 30-day period, so let's see what happens. Well, I'm not so sure the city council public works, but no. Yeah, exactly. So our next meeting here, we'd like to get an update is really what would be appropriate. Okay. That's right, the friends. Okay, so the next item on the agenda is C7, which is the consideration of the recommendation of slip fee or slip qualification relief for the commercial crab fishermen. So, Eric, could you go over your staff report and your recommendation for this agenda item, please?
Yeah, sure. So this is another item that came out of some public comment, I believe, at the last meeting. And as you heard earlier from Mr. St. John, the crab season has had a little bit of a problem this year with not being open. They had some domoic acid poisoning, which is a naturally occurring toxin in plankton that accumulates in fish, bait fish, and crab tissues and eventually goes away after the algae blooms sort of go away. But this being an El Nino year, I guess, blaming it on Nino with warmer water, it's been persisting up and down the coast. Currently, it's still closed. Dungeness crab season is still closed statewide. From what I understand, the Fish and Game Department doesn't want to open it up until they've got the whole state clean. They don't want to open up parts of the state, even though they've opened it up partially recreationally. Rockfish season, from what I understand, is open from rock crab season is open from, I believe, Piedras Blancas South commercially. So again, this comes to from a future agenda item. A lot of our commercial fishermen, I think as you heard when Lori French brought this up a meeting or two ago, make their season between the opener, which is in early November, through the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. Still closed being now. Obviously, they missed all that. I've checked around, and I think we heard some public comment at the last meeting. There's been some harbors that have provided some degree of rent relief or either outright waiving of fees or delaying of fee payment, waiving of late fees and whatnot to try and help the crab fishermen along. I know a lot of the harbors and Morro Bay included with the Women for Fisheries group, there have been fundraising efforts to try and help folks that are really hurting because of this closure. What we're recommending tonight is Harbor Advisory Board consider some degree of slip relief. We talked about slip qualification earlier. The Dungeness crab and rock crab season have been federally declared as disasters through the SBA, Small Business Association, which have also come around town over the last few weeks and tried to provide some sort of relief in terms of low-interest loans, so that, like they did with the salmon closures. So it is a federally declared disaster. The Governor Brown also declared a disaster previously as well. Fiscally, in terms of a fiscal impact, we don't have a ton of crab fishermen. They're not the majority of our fishermen in our slips. A lot of our fishermen, crab fishermen, have been out on slip sublease discount, which is 25% of their normal rate, so they're paying a lower rate anyhow. So if we did some sort of relief in terms of outright waiving of fees or recommending outright waiving of fees, I did kind of a thumbnail sketch, and based on who's gone right now and who's been gone, who's expected to come back, and what our slip fees are, and the number of folks we have. We've got a couple folks that are on the piers that are not all in slips. I don't see it amounting to any more than about $1,500 in lost revenue, $800 to $1,500 in lost revenue, maybe a little more, but I wouldn't suspect too much more. I don't know, and maybe we can hear some public comment if there's any sign of the season going to be opening. I certainly haven't heard anything. They did testing. They're doing it weekly, and obviously they're not open yet, so the testing must still be turning out bad. So we're recommending, batting it around in terms of what sort of things may be appropriate, slip fee relief or waiver relief from qualifying. Like I said, this year and the previous item we spoke earlier, Mr. St. John was the last one I think we have that needs to get qualified. So keeping their slips for this year isn't necessarily an issue. We could entertain looking back in a at folks that had to use a waiver, crab fishermen that had to use a waiver to qualify to keep their slips this year. That could certainly be thrown into the mix. And then obviously for next year as well. Hopefully the season will be normal next year, but there's no telling. So with that, I'll open it back up to public comment and then to the board.
Okay, so we want to have public comment. Anyone like to come up?
We really have to stop meeting like this. Lori French. Okay, there was a Dungeness Crab Task Force conference call today that lasted a fun-filled 4 hours. The last testing in Bodega Bay came back as two areas were clean. One area, I think it was Russian River, I'm going off my brain here, was one crab tested at 35 parts per million. To be declared clean, it has to test at 30 or below. So one crab is keeping Bodega closed right now. Bodega would be the opening line for Area 10. The state, I'm going to correct Eric here, the Dungeness Crab Task Force made a recommendation to the state Fish and Game that we either open the whole state, statewide, or open it in our traditional openings, which would be Area 10 and then Northern California later. Crescent City's tested clean. Eureka's tested clean. Trinidad had the luck of having two tests clean, but before the second test was clean, they gathered another sample and took that to the lab. And before the results were turned in, that was tested, and they had two crab that tested it. I think it was 33 or 30%. So that took an area that was almost clean and threw it back into the pile again. Fort Bragg continues to be the lukewarm hot spot. Their crabs, out of a test run of six, like two of them are testing in the 50s. So we're in a definite holding pattern. The holding pattern right now is starting to scare some fishermen because crab go into their clutch this time of year, and after they clutch, they go into a shedding, molting, and the crab quality goes down. Which you get a soft crab, and then the season usually closes. So we're looking at that right now. Not very happily. Tomorrow morning in San Francisco on Skomas Wharf, there are two senators that, for the life of me, I cannot remember their names, who are introducing a bill to get us some relief funding. Not sure how I feel about that. We'd rather be fishing, plain and clear. That's, I think, about all I have right now. Do you have any questions?
So dire straits right now. I mean, really, there's no season.
There's no season. Yeah. I had somebody sent me a picture of a Crescent City fisherman out holding a sign that said, homeless crabber, need rent money. That didn't make me feel very good. And the Crescent City food bank that was started by just private people has gone from 20 families to 38 families. So do you have any questions?
Neil, can you maybe speak a little bit to how this is going to affect qualifications for boats?
Okay. Arlangosta didn't make it last year because my husband had surgery and salmon, they got a couple salmon landings, but it wasn't worth spending the diesel on. And there's obviously no Dungeness landings on it. We usually use the Longosta in the springtime for Dungeness down here, and I don't see that happening. We're debating about bringing the Nadine home from Bodega, where it's been since October. If there's no landings, there's no landing. The salmon season, as I said, stated earlier, I haven't read the report, but it's not looking very good. And the report included which areas were going to be open, which areas weren't. And my husband read it, and he said that the area where there were fish last year might be closed off this year. So we're having fun in our house, in all crabbers' houses right now. Do you have any more questions?
Any other questions here for Lori? No? Thank you, Lori.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Alan?
I think to bring the thing into focus, if you could give us some idea of what percentage of your annual fishing income is from crabbing, and then what percentage do you make in a typical year after the beginning of March? I mean, what would be possible, what percentage of that income would be possible at this late date? I mean, I'm trying to see, there's no really any hope for a recovery at this point, is there?
We're hoping, because I'd like to see some income in our house, and I'm not alone. I know there's other fishing families that were like, whoa, this is, as Bill Blue said at another meeting a couple days ago, he goes, I don't know who you are, right? I don't care who you are. If you're a crabber, no matter how well off you were at the beginning of the season, you're hurting now. And he's totally right. You know, like I said, we have reserves. Our reserves just went to the IRS on Monday. And the last little bit of the reserves is going to a fishing game on April 1st. To answer your question, I would say probably about 70% of our yearly income comes from Thanksgiving to New Year's. The spring grind, because we're the last of the grinders, my husband and brother-in-law and son, I would say that would be the other 30%. That and the salmon season would be the other 30%. And then we typically take, depending on what the salmon season is, we typically take the month of September and October off to get ready for crab season. But I can get you numbers.
That's all right. I wanted to point, it seemed to me that even if things went as good as you could possibly be expected from here on out, your income would still be just a tiny fraction of what you would ordinarily have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, right now we're thinking, what's next November going to bring? And that was part of the discussion today at the Crab Task Force meeting.
Okay. Gene?
Yeah, Lori, in the past, after El Nino, do the crabs kind of rebound quite a bit, or are you hoping for next year to be good? Or I'm just trying to figure out, I know you're hoping, but I'm just trying to get some handle on how the swing of crabs actually work.
We're in uncharted territories right now. This has never happened before. I don't know. I really don't. We're hoping that the water cools down, which it has, and it'll clean the crab up. But there also are some great inadequacies on the testing and what they're comparing the testing to.
So one question is probably pretty stupid, but I'll ask it anyway. What would be the, not opportunity, but to re-equip your boat to go, do you have any other permits for any other types of fish to fish?
Salmon permit.
Okay.
My husband, I think he was joking, but he may not have been joking. He told me that I needed to find 200 buckets for so they could go slime milling. And, yeah, that was my opinion, too.
Okay, I just...
We're looking at that. The black cod, we're revisiting that.
Open access or leasing a permit?
Open access, the quota is pretty low. I don't know what it is right now.
3,200 pounds every 2 months.
Yeah, it is low. And leasing the quota, I know, because then you start getting into the observer cost, and I don't know if that would pencil out.
You talk about the quota fund?
Mm-hmm.
But you could lease an A permit or something. But
Yeah, that's their department. My husband and brother, they're bouncing all sorts of things off there.
I'm just curious because, as you say, if this is just a bleak situation, it might, how feasible would it be to re-equip? And I think you're probably looking at that as business people. So
yeah, okay. They've been talking that over.
Okay. Any other questions for Lori? Alan?
I heard somewhere that the domoic acid, the organism that's bringing it on, is not dependent on water temperature. That it's not a result of warm water. Have you heard that anywhere?
I've read both, and then I've also read a report that said it may be a result of coming in on ship's ballasts. So then that goes back to the inadequate information and testing protocols.
Thanks for working on this, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Public comment, please, on this subject?
Yeah, go ahead.
State your name, please.
Yeah, my name is John Gillespie. I'm a commercial fisherman in Morro Bay and all over the West Coast and North and South Pacific experienced. And over a lot of years, I've seen warm water years. These are some of the worst. By the way, the Albacore fleet was down a third in its production this year. I went down to the National Pacific Council meeting this year especially to point out to them that this is why their management doesn't work, because it doesn't allow for fishermen to make lateral moves. And this was why I felt and encouraged the purchase of these communal permits for black cod. But then that turned into a fiasco because the National Marine Fisheries Service didn't take care of business, and they put a burden and impediment on fishermen to where the observer costs just ate up any potential profits. I guess what I'm trying to say, I should start this out with the fact that any city that is interfacing with a fishing community has to realize there's ups and downs and variations seasonally and cyclically and over years, and we've been impedimized, if that's a word, by federal agencies and disruptive regulations that have got the whole fleet in a downfall. Crews aren't available, young people don't want to get into fishing anymore, and I don't blame them. I guess the point I'm getting to is that the city needs to really see that this is kind of stuff that happens. And one of the things I've noticed just lately, I've gotten a ticket, or I'm going to get a ticket for a vestigial law of living on board and being on the boat too much on the T pier. And I'm a commercial fish boat. This is the port that I fish out of and work out of because I live here. It's where I refit the boat, overhaul it. And we're in the course of doing that now, and we're down at the boat a lot off and on. And to have the city not understand that this is how a fishing community works, how a fishing operation works, it's very discouraging, because I feel, again, there's an entity that's trying to tell me and a lot of other fishermen how to fish and how to run our business, and they don't have any idea how it works. I would have been here earlier, I guess, and brought this up. But anyway, I'm finding that the city isn't being very cooperative after the notice I just received.
So what do you think on this subject, though, on the Dungeons and Crab, on the reduction of fees? Are you in favor of that?
I think all fishermen need help. Okay. And they need to have a city that understands that they need help. And they need at least some kind of understanding that they're trying the best they can. And with all these impediments in the way, we're not able to do anything about it. And to get draconian notices that you can't do this or that, and it's something that's actually part of the fishing community. It's been done in every port for all the years I've been fishing. We overhaul and outfit our boats throughout the off season, and now I'm feeling like I don't even know when I can go down to the boat or when I'm able to be there.
Sir, I'm sorry. I think you're kind of going off the subject that we're discussing right now.
The crabber guy's got a terrible problem,
okay,
and so does every other fisherman.
Right.
And the crab guys, for sure, they need to have the understanding of it. But I think it's a larger picture than just that.
I agree, but we need to stick to what we're trying to discuss right now. So thank you.
All right.
Okay, any other public comment? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the board so we can have our discussion here. Start on the other end here, Gene. Okay. Alan?
No comment.
Lynn?
Yes, I do have a question, and that is, since it's been deemed to be a disaster, are there any other services other than the low-cost loans for the crab fishermen?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know if Lori knows anything more, but I have not been made aware of anything. Other than, like I said, some of the harbors are providing some sign of relief.
At this time, currently, there are no other services. The SBA loans, the people that I've heard back from are being turned down for them because they didn't make enough money last year, which is kind of ironic. Just privately funded, the food banks that have been for the donations, and then what CCWF has had, donations that were getting money out to the ports, that topped at $5,500. I'm trying to start another round right now, but there is absolutely no help.
Thank you.
Lori, is it your opinion that the SBA, that whole program is largely ineffective in your case? In the case of the crab fishermen?
It didn't get help to where the help was needed. Crews could not apply. The SBA loans were for working capital only. And the couple feedbacks that I have heard, one fishing family, they have three homes that they own outright, but they ran up some credit card debt, putting bills on their credit cards right now. And the SBA didn't like that and said, no, no. And you cannot use the SBA money to pay those credit cards off. There is some pretty tight restrictions. Those I've heard from other fishermen that people are looking into equity houses or equity loans on their houses and things like that when their houses are already paid off. It's not pretty.
Well, you know, again, a loan is a loan. You got to pay it back.
Yeah, you have
to
pay it back.
And so, I mean, really, if you're not making any money, it's a moot point. I mean,
right.
Truthfully.
And then, did I say that the SBA loans were not available for crew whatsoever?
Right, only working capital.
Only working capital. Right. Okay.
So what we have here in front of us, though, is Eric. I have a couple questions here. You've stated here that approximately $800 to $1,500 of lost revenue. Is that total for this fiscal year ending June 30th, 2016?
No, that was an estimate. I should have been more clear. I thought about that after I made the comment and we went on. That is an estimate of if we waived the complete fees for 1 month for all of our crabbers and the slips and piers based on their vacancy and everything else, it'd be about $800 to $1,500 per month.
So your recommendation, though, is to waive the fees 25%. Is that correct?
No, our
Just kind
of that's the vacancy rate. Our fishermen are gone, and
I got you.
Like the French's are, they're able to enjoy a 25%.
I understand.
Total fee vacancy.
Okay. So basically, if we waive the fees for 6 months, it would cost us lost revenue approximately. Yeah. $9,000. Is that correct?
At the top end. That's my estimate.
No, because all these guys are going to come back, and they're not going to be sub-losing their slips. So, you know, there's only a couple of months left, and so it's going
to... Might I interject again?
Okay.
Don't make me do math.
I have a couple questions. So, all right, then. Those are my questions. Neil? Dana?
I would just say that I would be in favor of recommending slip relief.
Okay. Ron?
Well, it's a little enough, but we have to be sensitive to precedent as well as the distress situation. I recommend, I move that we recommend to the City Council 1 month waiver of current slip fees for permit holding commercial crab fishermen with City of Morro Bay slips.
So could you repeat that? Is that 1 month?
Correct.
Okay. Do I hear a second? Hearing no seconds, we'll bring it back here to the table. So Dana?
I would amend that motion to, or I would change that motion to say, I see where you're going with that, but I would say until the season or until the testing allows for the season to open, because otherwise we're going to be saying this again next month, possibly.
And I appreciate that. The challenge with that is that it isn't, as I understand, the way the crab fishery works, it's not a calendar deadline. It has more to do with the life cycle of the creature. But I understand your point, and if you want to go for more than one, then make a motion for more than 1 month.
Dana?
Okay.
Alan?
How about we could either revisit it in a month? I mean, relieve it in 1 month and then review that decision for the next month, or we could say relief until the season opens.
Well, this has to go to the City Council. I mean, I'm just looking at it on a procedural basis, too, is that they have to make the final decision. We're making a recommendation. So to go back and forth, I mean, with an unknown, I'm just not so sure. I think we either need to make another motion or we don't make a motion and we don't give them relief. I mean, if that's our choice. So, Neil? Oh, Lori?
Basically, San Francisco just gave 3 months. Crescent City, I think, is up there now, too. It's just something to think about.
And Crescent City gave 3 months?
I think they did.
Yeah.
I have to verify that.
I'd like to make a motion that we provide relief for the three-month period for the six crabbers that we have in our harbor. And, you know, again, that's probably... That's my motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to give relief to the six crabbers, a 3 months slip relief. And I have a second from Lynn. Do I have any discussion here?
One point. How about anyone having a crab permit? I'm not sure that six is the absolute.
Well, I'm just looking at it in a fiscal year. I mean, if
permit holder. No, permit holder.
We're just saying that that was too specific to just maybe if you say six, there might have been seven.
Yeah, approximately
here
six.
We had a gentleman who had a southern rock crab permit.
Somewhere in Slip, somewhere in the Piers.
Okay, I apologize. I'll state a commercial crab fishing permit holder. Is that correct? And Lynn, would you agree to that?
Yes.
Okay, we have a first and second. Any discussion? Gene? Alan?
No.
Lynn? None. Neil? No. Dana? Ron? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. So we'll take this to the City Council, and hopefully it would be just a line item. Thank you very much for your time. Okay, let's get back to staff report. Harbor Department staff report, Eric.
We didn't deal with the slip qualification issue, is that?
Pardon me? No, we did.
The other half, well, that was the.
Four slip qualification relief.
We had relief and then we had slip qualification.
I hear it.
Well.
You're still on the item if you want to continue to discuss.
Well, I think
they're two separate issues.
True, but you know, I think that the issue right now is that we don't know if they're going to have waivers, those particular permit holders, and if they do have a waiver, they'll probably use it, and then we wouldn't, you know, be utilized. If they completely have a disaster in the season, like Eric stated, then it might be a blanket. So I'm not so sure we want to discuss something that we really don't know yet. That's just my feeling. I mean, if anyone else wants to discuss it, but I feel that we're just talking about rhetoric right now, and let's see what happens. Does everyone else agree to that? Okay, let's move on then. Eric, your staff report, please, B1.
Sure. Now that one's on the top of my stack. Couple things not on the agenda or not on my list, but I want to bring them up anyhow. As you hopefully all were informed, you all now have a city email through the city's new Microsoft Office 365 website. And so the city is wishing that everybody on all our advisory boards all obtain city emails, and that'll make it a little easier for the city to communicate with everybody instead of all the individual emails. So just want to make you re-aware of that.
Just real quick question on that. I mean, yeah. I'm not a computer expert, but so let's say we do get that email with moralbay.gov or whatever. How do you access it? Do you have to go to another? I mean, I just don't understand the details, and I really haven't had the time or the effort or the energy to.
To learn
I got
trick.
You should
have been emailed.
I did get the email.
The instructions. Basically, you go to a website and you could save it as a favorite. I've got, our city emails are obviously our city emails. We just go to the program, but we've got a lot of document sharing things going on now, too. And I've just got saved in my favorites, my login to go to the cloud shared website spot for all that stuff. So you're having to go to a website based login instead of your email program, whatever that is. I mean, so instead of going to your Gmail login or your Microsoft whatever .com login, you just go to a separate login site and log into your emails that way.
Okay. It has its own email program that you use?
Yeah, it's Microsoft Outlook. So you'll...
Yeah, good.
Okay, so did everyone get that email?
If not, contact myself, Polly, Laura, anybody in the office. We can help you through it.
Okay, Eric,
it's not that difficult.
Sorry to hang up on this one. Is there a place in there where I can just forward that to one of my other daily email addresses?
Perhaps. I don't know.
Okay.
We can work that out. Just be aware. And Gene took my thunder on my second one, batting down the hatches. I guess we got pretty good amount of storms coming, rain, big surf. I throw the warning out there, the advisory to the public, especially in the Whittlewall surf spot inside the harbor at the base of the North Jetty. We're going another cycle of some minus tides in the afternoon, and that is not necessarily a great place to bring the kids or to go if you're inexperienced because it's too big everywhere else. We get currents that are ripping out, and we've been plucking people out left and right that are getting swept into the harbor mouth and to some pretty big surf, so just be aware of that. Recent department activity. Unfortunately, I'm starting on a very down item here. Back in early February, one of our liveaboards in our bay went missing for about 20 days. And unfortunately, his body was recovered on February 7th, found in the back bay. With the assistance of the sheriff, who recovered that, and the Harbor Patrol recovered him. He was last seen one evening, I think on January 21st, with some friends, Avery Danley. Danley was a fellow's name. So our condolences go out to his family and friends. Tragic accident. Sheriff didn't find any wrongdoing. I don't know if the autopsy is complete, but unfortunately those things happen from time to time. And on the opposite end of the scale, on February 14th, Valentine's Day, very crowded waterfront, a lot of people on the water. As you know, weather was great, but the surf was still pretty big. Harbor entrance, I don't think, was posted as hazardous that day, but it was the previous day. But four people went out in about 18-foot aluminum boat for a quick spin outside the harbor, got a little south of the South Jetty, got hit by a set of waves, flipped over. Two adult men, a woman and her 8-year-old child went into the water. They were not, I think there are a fair amount of kayakers over on the Sandspit, and people on the Sandspit that likely would have called 911 had it progressed any further, but when the boat overturned, they were all clinging to the upturned boat. It had flotation in it so that it floated. One of the males aboard reported seeing their floating VHF radio, handheld radio, bob by, and he grabbed it and made a mayday call on the radio. So the little girl saw the radio and they reported a mayday. Male called, one of the adult males called the radio, called mayday on the radio. Our patrol heard it, rushed out there and got the full process going. Coast Guard involved, Harbor Department folks, sent a rescue swimmer into the water pretty quickly. The worst of the four was the mother, which tough call for Jeremiah Jacobs. He was our rescue swimmer, that was first in the water. When you're faced with that situation, you got four people in the surf, surf's still big, you got a little girl, and of course, you know, everyone's natural instinct is going to be go for the child. Well, he had to make a decision, which one do I try to rescue first? He went for the mother because she was in not too good a shape. Got her onto the jet ski, and the jet ski got her to one of our patrol boats, rushed her into the harbor, ended up swimming the little girl into the beach, turned her over to some bystanders on the beach who helped her out, and then as he got back out, and Coast Guard was showing up on scene, and then more of our folks in the water, along with fire department. Got the two males over to the Coast Guard boat onto their motor lifeboat and got them back into the harbor and got everybody safely returned home, and mother made full recovery. So great call that we had there in terms of coordination between the fire department, Coast Guard, and us. Jeremiah Jacobs, like I say, he is our primary patrol officer. Marcos Green, Michael Talmadge from the fire department, Scott Mather, Dana Stein, all of our folks did a great job, and what could have been a real tragedy turned out to be a great day. City Council at their last meeting awarded all the folks involved with some commendations, some certificates of appreciation, so that was a great thing that City Council did last week. Our last meeting 2 weeks ago. And again, we always encourage folks to be mindful of ocean conditions. Valentine's Day, like I say, is a beautiful day, sunny, and one of those sort of disarming days where people think it's a great day to be on the water. Well, you just got to be mindful of what the conditions are. Don't ever hesitate to contact the Harbor Patrol or the Coast Guard. I'll put a plug in for Surfline, who's the surf forecaster, and they have surf cams all over the place. They've just obtained more surf cams. We've got another one on the Coleman restroom that looks out at the harbor entrance, a nice bird's eye view right into the harbor entrance. So that's a great one to look at. And they've got another one down north into town somewhere in the beach tract. I don't know if somebody's house. So they look at Atascadero Beach area. It's a subscription service that you got to pay for to get the cam for more than, I think, 10 or 15, 20 seconds. But There's a lot of good resources out there, so folks need to use them. Statistics for February, including up through the 26th, at least when I wrote the staff report, 13 emergency responses, 112 calls for service, 11 days of small craft advisories, 10 days of hazardous entrance condition. Like I say, we pulled about 20 to 25 people out of the water in strong ebb tides at the Widowall surf spot. So again, just remind folks that that may not be the safest place for everybody to be, even though it looks disarming at times. Other city council activity: on the February 9th meeting, council approved their 2015-16 mid-year budget amendments. The short and sweet for the Harbor Fund was requested revenue estimate increases of $35,686 and some expenditure increases to match of $33,626. Fair amount of revenue that we do very conservative revenue estimates.
Hey, Eric, yep. Excuse me. I did a little bit of adding, and maybe I'm wrong here, but on the expense side, adding $20,000, $5,000, $2,000, $13,000, $10,000, or reduction. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. Those are on the expense side. We took some expenses out, so it
still is more than $33,000, I think.
No, it adds
no?
up.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to do math in public, but
right.
Okay. A couple of those items were expense request changes,
all right.
Not expenses up, expenses down, so it brings the total down.
All right.
Trust me.
All right. Thank you.
So a net, a little about $3,000, $2,000 net increase into the accumulation fund at the end of the day. I think revenues are probably still going to come in more robust than this. Lease site revenues are coming in very strong. And all other revenues are coming in as well, and there's a slight increase to the master fee schedule last year, or this year as well. So a little bit of extra breathing room in there. And then we asked to put $25,000 towards the fish cleaning station, which it was in the wrong place in the budget, so we had to do some budget changes there. Related to that, since it's coming to my mind, I just got notification, it's not in here, that Boating and Waterways is granting us $250,000 for startup for the launch ramp. I initially thought from the letter I got that it was just $250,000 for the whole thing and they're only going to give us enough to do a small amount. But I was recently informed that that is in fact really just the planning, permitting, and initial engineering workup to get to the project, assuming. So it's in the governor's budget. It made it out of Department of Boating and Waterways staff. Recommendation in the governor's budget. The governor's budget goes through the normal cycle, and if it gets approved, hopefully before the end of the fiscal year, if it gets approved, then we start talking to DBW about process, and then it goes to DBW commission for approval. Generally, these things do get approved from the commission if it's in the governor's budget, and then we start into that initial staging, and then if things start to go well towards the end of this year, we'll apply for additional money to keep the process going. So good news on that front. A little later than we had hoped, but
congratulations.
Still moving. So again, February 23rd meeting, council recognized the Harbor Patrol officers for that incident. Also, the February 23rd meeting, city council adopted their 2016-2017 goals and program objectives, which is included in the staff report, attachment one. I think Ron made a reference to that earlier. I think Boatyard initially in the first goals workshop, Boatyard inadvertently dropped off the list, which caused a little bit of distress among some folks, maybe sitting up here. City Council and staff recognized that, and we got it back onto the goals objective list. And so also the 23rd meeting on February, the City Council adopted a mitigative negative declaration for one of the project's conditional use permit on Rose's Landing. Lease site for a new gangway dock, boat slips, some upstairs, deck changes, and some downstairs public walkway that's more seating than public walkway at this point, so they're doing some rearrangements to make a true harbor walk on the ocean side down there on the back side of that building. We have, on the grant front, also we obtained two more nice grants from the Cable Liaison Committee. We got $8,000 to send us back to Washington, D.C. for the normal CMANC meetings, which are coming up week after next. And the Cable Committee also granted us $40,000 towards maintenance and repair requirements on the ice-making machine. Although the ice-making machine is on a city lease site being run by Santa Monica Seafood / Central Coast Seafood. The city does have a fair amount of maintenance and repair responsibility still on that machine. Unfortunately, ice is not flake ice, even though it's great high-quality flake ice. At best, in the best of worlds, it's a break-even prospect. It's really a money-losing prospect just because of the maintenance on the machine primarily. We help the Santa Monica Seafood maintain that, and that grant's really going to help that do some major work on that machine that's upcoming. In the dredging front, as you know, from past reports, we've got a little over $3 million in this federal fiscal year for the dredge ship Yaquina to come, which they're coming in May. We also recently received $4.09 million in what's called plus-up funding, which was in the federal FY16 fiscal year, the one we're in now. Once the president's budget went through Congress, added on about $48 million more to the Corps than it was in the president's budget. So the Corps just finally got around to getting that money analyzed and what they're going to do with it, and Morro Bay gets another $4.09 million of that money. So Corps right now is working, which will go towards dredging of the rest of the channel. So Corps is working that up. I was at their offices yesterday, and I'll get to that here in a second. They're now intending to dredge with the Yaquina come May and then put out to bid and contract out with a dredge company, outside dredge company, and have them in here sometime this fall, early winter, to come in and dredge from, Target Rock area on in, whatever the Yaquina doesn't get, which is good. And then in the president's budget, proposed budget for FY17, which just came out at the same time as the Corps announcement, the president's budget's got another $4.4 million in it, which is almost a million more than what's typically been used, so we'll hopefully get a little more dredge time, and they're also going to do some more investigative work on the North Breakwater, which is taking quite a beating recently, and rocks may be moving around, so they'll be looking at that. So good news from the Corps front. What I wanted to add on to that, that I went down to the Corps yesterday and spent the morning down in their offices in Los Angeles. Through working through our through CMANC and through talking to the Corps folks down at our winter and fall meetings in past months, and then talking to our State Park Marina dredge engineer consultant on possible alternatives and how we get the State Park Marina dredged. And we were initially looking at maybe going after the permitting agencies for some sort of a variance or way to dispose of our dredge material in the open ocean, or in the nearshore disposal area in the open ocean. And that consulting agency, Anchor QEA is the name of the company. What Anchor and talking to the Corps worked out and seemed to be probably the best alternative to get that State Park Marina dredge, because, as you know, it's the high cost of dredge material disposal that's killing us. The suggestion was made, and we're pursuing it, and Corps is totally on board of basically the Corps doing our dredging under their help, our assistance for others program, which they do dredging for other towns, agencies, ports and harbors, if those ports and harbors provide the funding for it. So if we are able to include it in their project, they bid it, they contract it, they manage it. Our material gets, our 60,000 cubic yards gets added in with their 500,000 cubic yards, and in sum total, it meets the beach disposal specification requirement. It's a little bit of a regulatory stretch to get there, but the Corps folks in LA are completely willing to do it. The other way of doing it is like we did with our mooring area dredging a few years ago, I think back in 2003 or 2004, 2005. We had to dredge our mooring area, and what we did with that is we waited for the Corps to get their contractor on board, and the second they did, we had another contract ready to go and said, here you go, sign here. And they were, the bidders were aware of our contract going into their bidding for the Corps, so they were aware of it, and it's separate contracts. But what we gained there, and what we gained with the Corps running our project, we'll have to pay for everything that the costs incurred, but what we don't pay for is mobilization and demobilization, which is a humongous amount of the cost to do dredging. So either way works for the Corps. They're going to start down their paperwork and planning and permitting trail to allow for either of those two options, either us doing our own project separately, but piggybacking onto the Corps project, or the Corps running their project. Can't say enough about the folks in Los Angeles and their willingness to do this. And it's not a thing they haven't done in the past. They've done things like this with other folks. What's going to be tough is convincing the regulators to allow this. And with the Corps, if they take on the project themselves and we just pay them the extra money to get the thing done and help them with planning and permitting, it's really just the Corps going to the regulators with, you know, a hypothetical 560,000 cubic yards of material that's, say, you know, 90 or 95% sand, as opposed to, you know, 99% sand with their own project and 100% mud with ours. A little tougher sell that way. So we'll see how it goes. We're going to the Corps regulatory folks next in Ventura to see how they are on those two options. And then if we're still moving forward, then we go to Coastal Commission and start seeing if it's a possibility. And then the really hard part, or I guess that's a hard part as well, but figuring out how to fund it. Because Corps is moving pretty quickly with their plus-up funding in this fiscal year. They need to get it moving, and they're going to be dredging this winter. So exciting, challenging. It's going to be a foot race to get there at the pace they're moving at, because they're moving pretty quickly. But we'll see how it goes.
Good job, Eric.
Monetary scaling for that?
What's that?
How much money?
For?
City.
First seat of the pants estimate is about $2 million, somewhere between probably two and three. When Associated Pacific did our dredging, the unit cost per yard was $25, which is fairly, and speaking to some of the bigger dredge contractors that have done projects up in the Bay Area and down south, 25 is a little on the high end for close by aquatic disposal, not off the charts, but reasonable for here given our where we are. So 25 a yard, 60,000 cubic yards, 1.5 million, you know, another $500,000 for planning, permitting, everything else, and then, you know, bump that up another $500,000 for unforeseen things. So yeah, somewhere between 2 and 3 million would be my estimate. I'm going to have our, as we move forward, talking to the Corps navigation folks who are the ones that will be doing this, and then talking to the permitting folks. Our consultant is going to start working up some cost magnitude as well, and try to home in on a closer cost of what it might be to see this thing through if we keep moving forward. So we'll have to be seeking funding here, some creative funding here. If it works in this manner, a lot better. It makes the picture of taking on the State Park Marina renovation project and amortizing that $2 or $3 million over 30 years, it starts to pencil out again, where when you dispose of it upland, it just simply doesn't. So we'll be going back to state parks as well and knocking on their door again and seeing if we can get some help from them and looking at creative ways of making this thing happen in a quick hurry here.
And who in city government?
Who in city government is managing this process?
You're staring at him.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do you have something? Oh, I thought you did, Dan. I thought you were getting ready to read something. Okay, sorry. On to the next item, plover fencing. We've started to stage material over there. March 1st marks the beginning of the snowy plover nesting season. We're getting good help again, I think, this year from State Parks and the California Conservation Corps, getting our symbolic fencing up there. Still got our normal corridors across and the standard request to the public to keep your dogs leashed over there and stay out of the snowy plover nesting zone. State Parks has been fairly successful with the nesting seasons over there and monitoring it. So, you know, a flat-out shutdown of the area is what will come if we can't manage it properly. So just ask the public to respect that fencing and stay out. We kind of had a referral of this earlier on our SWIP qualifying discussion earlier. And this may have been the case you were thinking about, Ron. Brian Winson was one of our commercial fishermen, is one of our commercial fishermen who last year requested a second year waiver from qualifying. I denied it based on some fraudulent fish landing receipts that he had submitted to try to qualify in the first place. Brought it to he appealed to the Harbor Advisory Board. Harbor Advisory Board's recommendation was to allow him to stay in his slip, basically giving him a sort of a de facto waiver until His case was adjudicated, provided his slip fees remained current. Well, his slip fees didn't remain current, unfortunately, and we had to cancel a slip on December 1st due to non-payment of fees. I've since been notified by Fish and Game or Fish and Wildlife that he's pled guilty to some of those counts, of forgery and of fish landing receipts, and then some Fish and Game violations as well unrelated to our action, and those are currently, I guess, under sentencing review right now. So just giving an update on that. Next item, as you know, we did a Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan as part of our requirements from one of the grants we did, we received to put together the Community Quota Fund through the Nature Conservancy several years ago. So that Community Sustainability Plan was one of the grant requirements, which we did through Lisa Wise Consulting. Great plan, as you know, the number one recommendation on it is the boatyard. Then comes fuel and cold storage and several other things that little bits and pieces are seeing the light of day as we move forward in time. Lisa Wise Consulting, Henry Pontarelli, applied to the Rural Planning Division of the American Planning Association for an award to recognize that plan, and we were just notified recently, I think I sent an email to you folks in the City Council, that was awarded. The 2016 Vernon Deans, if I'm pronouncing that properly, honor award for an outstanding small special project plan by the Small Town and Rural Planning Division of the American Planning Association. So unfortunately, there's not a big fat check that goes along with that, an award check, but they are offering to bring a city representative into Phoenix in April to accept that award on the city's behalf, so we'll be figuring out who may be going out for that. Harbor entrance condition information. As you know, our harbor entrance can be a not good place to be at times for boaters and surfers. We do have a long-standing Coast Guard harbor advisor, or Coast Guard bar warning that's been posted off and on during the years where the Coast Guard posts that the bar is dangerous for passage of mariners. They turn on the blinking lights on the North T Pier on the sign that says Rough Bar, and they put out broadcasts as well. Concurrent with that, when the bar warning in the past has gone up, and then when it's been brought back down, when it's been deemed okay for passage, we've been calling all the passenger for hire vessels and all the kayak rental folks. It's been a mixed blessing over the years, and that sometimes we get the message through, sometimes we don't. It's a fairly labor-intensive process to call all the landings and all the kayak rental folks. When it was just Verges and Kayak Horizons, and it wasn't too tough, but now it's Verges and Kayak Horizons and Patriot Sport Fishing and the stand-up paddle place and all sorts of other folks. And we don't always have the time to get to all those folks, so we've made the executive decision to stop calling them and notifying them. We sent them all a letter, and that decision was based on several things. One, all these new surf cams coming up and being up and running, and the internet and all the information available out there to folks, there really shouldn't be a reason why folks can't be aware that the entrance is posted hazardous. And we're also working, Coast Guard Chief Jay Nillis is working with our Deputy City Manager and implementing a City of Morro Bay website-based monitoring or module system. I think it's similar to sort of the Cue Alert or the Notify Me system where you can subscribe to, hopefully it comes to this, you can subscribe to the Coast Guard Hazardous Bar Warning, and we'll be hosting it. The Coast Guard will be responsible for entering the data day-to-day when the warning goes up and down, and if you subscribe to it, just like you get a Harbor Advisory Board agenda notice, if that's you so choose, you can choose to get the bar warning. So hopefully that'll get up and running in the next few months. Waterways analysis and management system. So the Coast Guard...
Oops. Excuse me.
Sorry?
Question about that last comment.
Yep.
Has there been any discussion about visual warning, indicator when the harbor is actually closed?
So the Coast Guard, as reported, I think, at the last meeting, and provide a handout, the Coast Guard now has the authority to close the harbor entrance to restrict it to vessel traffic to prohibit you from crossing with a substantial fine if you disobey that. Currently, when that's, and they have implemented it a couple times on some fairly recent swells, bar warning goes up more regularly. But both the hazardous bar warning And the closure, if they implement that, they do broadcast that on Channel 16. The visual, the only visual right now is the current yellow flashing lights on the sign, the Hasbar sign on the North Deep Pier.
Are they considering a black ball or something to go up so that you can see it as you actually drive down towards the entrance?
Coming by land or?
What's a black ball?
Yeah, I'll discuss it with the Coast Guard. I mean, a different light than the hazardous bar type thing? Something in addition to that?
Yeah, well, something to say, yeah, it's another. We've gone another step here.
Yeah.
Now it's not.
Well, I'll discuss that with
her. You can't do it.
Yeah, because that boat might not have had a radio. There was the boat that went out with rough bar and that rescue. I mean, I'm not sure. Do you know if those people were familiar with the navigational rules? I mean, they had a small craft, so.
One of them was a Coast Guard auxiliary, so I would hope
so.
Oh,
okay.
And they did have, the boat had a center console and overhead radio rack. They did have a radio in it, so presuming they're keeping their radio monitoring 16 like you're supposed to, you should be able to hear that. But like, as you are probably getting to, not everybody does that.
Yeah, Lynn?
Yeah, but on this point, it's one thing when you can be, you can look at the webcam and say the swells are really big and make the telephone call to you guys or to the Coast Guard and say, is the, not the hazardous warning, but is the entrance closed? But they do not always announce on the radio when it's reopened. And when the, when it's reopened and you can cross the bar again. So
correct.
That's
yeah.
something
so
of a
they,
problem. So you've got to guess.
Right. Well, if you're out on the water, hopefully you hear the broadcast that is closed. I guess you have to assume the absence of the broadcast, although that can be a dangerous assumption. But the absence of the broadcast means it's backed open. Yes, they don't start announcing, we're open now and it's okay to pass, and announce that every 15 or 30 minutes. You're right. If our website-based process works as planned, you should be able to go there and see whether the Hasbar is posted or it's closed.
But or if they had, as Alan suggested, a black ball, had some kind of a signal up there that you would absolutely know.
That's going to be up to the Coast Guard. They may, and maybe you folks around, you travel north where they have these restrictions in some of the bars up in the other district. Do they have a visual up there?
I don't know. It just makes sense to me. But I see a problem with the web-based thing, because when you're outside the harbor, you don't have access to the web to find out if you can come in.
Well, my response to that would be call on the radio. Call
yeah.
the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
You can get them everywhere. Call them and ask.
Yeah, and that's how you find out if it's open or not.
Yeah, you can call and see. But I agree. I mean, if we can get the more ways out there that you can access the information, whether it's web-based, whether it's visually based, whether it's radio-based, all of the above. Certainly, we'll try to see the.
Yeah, I think that's
more implemented.
Dana, you had a question.
Just a comment. This next item we're going to talk about, the WAMS, the Waterways Analysis Management System. I actually did go online and do that survey, and there's an area where you could ask that question or recommend a signal. So I like Gene's idea of, like, you got the yellow light saying it's a warning, the red light saying it's like you can't go out, and the red light goes off, then you know that you can, you've just got a warning, or there's no lights, and then you know. But there's a spot on there where you could ask that question.
Which is a great point. And so the next item, the Coast Guard, I think every 5 years, they do these surveys and go out to the public and the users and ask, hey, well, how's the navigation system working? How's all our buoys, our lights, our warnings, our horns, our these or those? How's it all working for you? Give us your input. And then they'll accommodate it in if it seems reasonable to them and it's something they can do. Great opportunity to go online. We've attached the flyer for the survey on here as well, so you can access it and make that recommendation. And any other things on the waterways, buoys, you know, horns, lights. Got any suggestions or up there? Coast Guard wants to know what your input is. And last but not least, the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund, which we talked about a little bit earlier. As you probably know or should know or may know, Andrea Luker was the first executive director hired by the Quota Fund when we first got up and running last year, or maybe late year before. She resigned her position to take a full-time position, temporary full-time position down at Port San Luis as the harbor manager down there. The Quota Fund recently conducted a recruitment over the last 4 or 5 months, and we decided to hire Dwayne Oberhoff as our new executive director. Dwayne owns a company called Ecological Assets Management, LLC. He comes from an interesting background of Cal Poly grad and marine and other critter-type biology. Did a short stint as a fish and game warden. But basically, he's in the business of ecological assets management, which means handling quota and other type commodities that are based on natural resources, whether that be lumber or whatever. But his main thing here is in Morro Bay, doing the quota fund management. He also manages the quota for the Monterey Bay Fisheries Trust, which is their equivalent to our quota fund. And basically what he does is he puts the quota on and off several websites for leasing. Occasionally the board elects to sell some of its quota for quota that isn't necessarily usable for us, and buy other quotas. So he's sort of our quota commodity exchanger. And so now he's also the executive director, so he's doing both jobs. And again, he comes with a lot of experience and got good knowledge in the whole quota fund system. He's going to be attending Pacific Fishery Management Council meetings, taking our messages of, we heard earlier some comment about the trouble with the observer program and the hurt it's kind of putting on our whole quota fund because it's such a high cost and pretty onerous for a small boat to take on an extra person. So Dwayne will be a good asset there and be helping us out there. His office is in Marina Square upstairs. I'm kind of jealous because he's got a great little office with a nice view. But that's where he is if you want to go visit him. I think he's on the NEP side upstairs. So if you want to go visit him and see what he's all about, feel free to go. Welcome, Dwayne. And with that, I'll stop talking. And any other questions?
Anything else for Eric here on his staff report, Ron?
Eric, I want to question and then a comment relates to the rescue that you reported in your staff report. Based upon the circumstances of that situation as you understand them, the factual circumstances, and as a trained water safety professional, if there was no Morro Bay Harbor Patrol or any of its equipment, how would the Coast Guard have affected that rescue, given the motor lifeboats that are stationed here?
So I'll start off with throwing some kudos at the Coast Guard, as they did bring their boat in quite deep into the surf line to affect assistance in that rescue. Long ago when jet skis were starting to come into the mainstream of coastal surf response with lifeguards and other agencies, we recognized pretty quickly that there's this zone between where the Coast Guard and our patrol boats can safely get, and we can get less deep and obviously can't go into the same kind of conditions Coast Guard can. But there's a zone between where the boats can operate and where rescuers from shore can operate. In the summertime, obviously, we've got lifeguards, and they do our beach lifeguarding, but we've got patrol folks that are also dual-trained in water rescue and have terrestrial-based water rescue capabilities, swimming capabilities. But there's that in-between zone where nobody can really get very effectively when these conditions present themselves. So had we not been there, had there been no Morro Bay Harbor Department whatsoever, obviously Coast Guard still would have responded. they would have been less effective at, I mean, they would have been as effective as they were, but there would have been nothing else to help them get to the victims that we provided. So it becomes a great synergy of us working together where between the two of us, and this really speaks to the against the argument that isn't there just a bunch of redundancy and you both don't need to be there. Well, the Coast Guard can only get in so far into the surf line, and they don't have good beach capability. Our fire departments can't effectively work from the beach very well in and of themselves. They do have folks on the Morro Bay Fire Department and Cal Fire out in Los Osos, but a little further away, do have rescue swimmer capabilities, but this, again, they're land-based and they're very limited in what they can do. So our jet skis and our personnel that are trained to use them and interface with them become that key critical link in between that makes it all happen. It's not always jet skis. I mean, Jeremiah went out on a patrol boat initially, suited up on the way out and dove off the patrol boat and went into the surf line. Coast Guard, while they've got folks that can go in the water, they're not really rescue swimmers like you see coming out of the helicopters that can truly swim around and affect rescues. They're just there to get people out of the water onto their boats. They can go in the water. They're tethered. It's not the most effective means of getting somebody out of surf. We become that critical interface. So to answer your question a little more shortly, I think it would have been very different had we not been there.
Thank you for the answer. My comment on this point is that I very much appreciate the City Council formally recognizing the life-saving capabilities of the Morro Bay Harbor Patrol. It was an appropriate thing to do, and I'm grateful for that recognition. I also hope the Council, in doing so, made the connection between that recognition on the one hand and the fallacy of one aspect of the 2015 Management Partners Report, which seems to be driving a lot of things as it relates to the harbor these days. And that's my comment. I mean, the Management Partners Report suggests that the Harbor Department and the Harbor Patrol and the Coast Guard are redundant. Therefore, there's no need to, because the Coast Guard's here, there's no need to have the Harbor Patrol. This is the second time I've commented on this, but it's a real hot button with me. That point in the Management Partners Report is fallacious. People continue to talk to me about this, not about it being fallacious, but about the wisdom of the Management Partners Report on this particular point, and it is not wise. As a matter of fact, it's ignorant.
Thank you. The other key too is that, you know, with in the last couple of reports that we've seen, although the rescues, the saving techniques of the Harbor Department, there's actually some action. I heard from Becca that there might be some lifeguard patrols with trucks on the weekends and because of all this activity that we're having. Is that correct, Eric? You know, even more activity.
Yeah, we're discussing that internally. I mean, fortunately, we've got several of our lifeguards. You know, they're here seasonally, Kyle Schaefer being one that works a lot on the patrol end of it as well. And we've got another one of our lifeguards that's over in the fire department training to be a reserve firefighter. So we do see a fair amount of crossover. So we've got some lifeguard. And we've got, you know, our guards that are here for the summer. There's usually a few that don't go off to school somewhere and are available during the wintertime, and we draw on those. So, yeah, we are batting around the idea of on some of these weekends because, as you say, I mean, things have changed. There's, you know, look at Valentine's Day weekend. It was crazy.
So, again, I'd like to have kudos to the Harbor Department. I do stop in the Harbor Department quite a bit, and it's a unique operation. I mean, a lot of people come in there. And it's really an intertwined operation. I mean, if the Harbor Patrol officers are out there doing their duty, there's really no one in the office. So it's really good to have the office staff, Polly and Lori, that answer questions, because if the officers are out doing their job, there's no one there, and people are constantly coming in the office. I mean, I've just been amazed in the limited time that I've been associated with the Harbor Department. The
you know, the amount of people that walk in that door about a variety of things. So thank you very much.
Alan?
Yeah, it's our community, really, that building. I just want to hit another octave on what Ron said, and it's always struck me as being important to recognize that the Harbor Patrol gets there way ahead of the Coast Guard. Well, you know, significantly ahead of the Coast Guard. And that's not to take anything away from the Coast Guard, but they have procedures that impede them. And I think when I was reading this case report, you guys, how long did you get there ahead of them? How much time elapsed between the time that...
Well, we had a heck of a head start in that we had one boat underway in the bay. It was down south a little bit, so
right.
we had a head start. Yeah, generally we can muster quickly because we're fewer in number, and they have a lot more procedures they need to go through before they can leave the dock. That's not to say we don't love them and need them, because we absolutely do. But they just, and it's no fault of their own, they've got, I think, six people they need to muster, get them all suited up, get the boat warmed up and underway. It just takes a little bit longer. We're typically, you know, one or two-man operation and we go. So.
Well, and they have, you know, they're probably superior outside the harbor, you know, saving yeah. people on boats and things. Yeah. But for this kind of thing, clearly the Harbor Patrol probably made the difference of the outcome for that woman. That,
I agree. But we also, and on the flip side of it is, for us to be able to go do that on a day, I mean, that day it was still fairly large surf-wise, but the entrance wasn't posted hazardous. There's other days where it's bigger where it isn't safe at all for our patrol boat to get out there, but our jet ski can. And even on the day of the Valentine's Day incident, having them out there as our resource as well in terms of backup and our safety element, because you know they can get in closer, they can get into the surf, or our patrol boats can't. So once we put our people into the surf, they're our backup as well to help us if something happens with us. So it's really a very symbiotic relationship where I think we both need each other. Neither of us can do it by ourselves.
It's a great combination.
Yeah. Gene?
Yeah, I'd like to relate just a little experience that I had earlier last month. We were inspecting a mooring. Harbor Department has to come out and inspect the mooring. They no sooner left our barge than they got a call for a surf rescue out on Azura Street. That boat turned around. By the time it got by us and heading back, Scott was running the boat, and I don't remember who the other patrolman was. He had already stripped off his pants, put on his wetsuit, and they were heading out the bay. That's how quick those guys are.
No question about it. We're very lucky and very fortunate. Thank you, Eric and Polly. Okay, no other questions here. I think we want to go down our list here and start at C1 and start going down some business items. The first one is the update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities. Dana?
Thank you. Well, the Marine Facilities Ad Hoc Committee, right now we're pretty much waiting for responses to some recommendations that we've made to the City Council regarding the facilities and the designs and feasibility study that we've recommended that we proceed with. Talking about the feasibility study, the Morro Bay Commercial Fishing Organization has applied for a grant with our local NEP, the Morro Bay NEP, for $5,000 to put in towards that sustainability report or study. And so that just shows their initiative and their solid interest, which goes back a long ways for the marine facility. So we're looking forward to, I think, next week when the City Council brings this
March 8th.
March 8th, and on their agenda, along with many other things. As far as our ad hoc committee continuing on, one of the things that we're probably going to be doing is looking at funding, grant funding, and just different avenues. The recent sustainability awarded sustainability report, it's not a recent report. That one was actually done a year or so ago. But it has a nice list to start with. If you look in that report, which is, it is a really good report, but it towards the end of it, it has a good list of organizations where grants and funding, this is definitely the start of our list, and then we're going to go from there. But I think that's our next procedure.
Okay, so as Dana mentioned, and I believe, look on the website, make sure the agenda item, if you're interested in supporting this or making sure the City Council, at least email them. There's going to be a lot on the agenda on March 8th. They're talking about the code enforcement, and they're talking about the wastewater treatment plant. So it's going to be a packed audience. So hopefully this will be just a slam dunk because we just did what they told us to do. But contact your city councilman and make sure that they are in favor of this. Thank you. C2, Neil?
I don't have an update at this time.
Okay. And update from the eelgrass ad hoc committee, Lynn?
Yes. We had a meeting with Jennifer Yost, who is a botanist at Cal Poly, and she is working on, focuses on eelgrass and what's happening with eelgrass in the area. She works with a number of other people from different specialties, including an oceanographer, biologist, ecologist, and a couple of other specialties, all participate and work on the study of eelgrass. And since there has been this great eelgrass loss, not only here in Morro Bay, but even worldwide, and it is such an important base component of keeping a healthy waterfront in an estuary anyway, they are focusing a lot more on trying to figure out what is wrong with the eelgrass and why there is the decline. This particular meeting was especially interesting, not only from the information, but from the exchange of ideas, the academic background of Jennifer and her co-workers, intermingling with Jean, who has a lot of experience with eelgrass working on moorings, and Neil, particularly with his academic background and his work in the oyster farm. So in the discussions, she was telling us about her projects that she is trying to get funded of various kinds, where her research focuses and the people she works with, and how some of that could work out. And then as one of the topics that came up was that eelgrass can be easily grown in a tank, and Neil has tanks. So we'll see if anything ever comes out of that. The other thing that came up was Gene talking about his clients who have to mitigate spending a lot of money trying to have reports and trying to assess the impact of eelgrass on their various projects. And that money in some instances has been toward mitigation, toward planting in other places. And then all this eelgrass dies. So it's throwing money where it's not doing any good. And there may be a way sometime down the road where that mitigation could go toward research to finding out what is the problem, what is the real problem with the decline in eelgrass. Is it temperature, salinity, turbidity, pH, sedimentation, predation, they don't really know. There are some people, and there are, of course, a lot of different ideas as to what's going on. So from that point of view, I thought it was a really exciting meeting to think that things might really move forward and that it could actually have a real active and productive outcome by this collaboration. We will be inviting Mrs. Yost and her colleagues to give a presentation to the Harbor Advisory Board on what they do and how they do it sometime in the near future.
Thank you, Lynn. Any questions for Lynn or Jean?
Neil may want to add something.
No, I. It's very exciting, though. I would say that the prospects of this collaboration could have some real meaningful results, I think, that would benefit the estuary and the businesses involved.
Yeah, that's great. Lynn, thank you very much.
Yeah. One other addition, Puget Sound has a mitigation project, we learned, up in Washington. And they didn't know anything about the one in California, but they said that the one in Puget Sound is pretty substantial, so we've got some more research to do.
Okay. Thank you. And then Ron, next is the update from the Marine Sanctuaries Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities.
During the February Harbor Advisory Board meeting, the board, as we will recall, unanimously recommended to the Morro Bay City Council that the city sponsor additional public information forums relative to a national marine sanctuary off the coast of Morro Bay. Recently, the council agreed to put the matter on a future council meeting agenda. The committee has been working to build a list of potential public information forum presenters who have experience living with one or more national marine sanctuaries and who could speak to local control, regulatory, and economic experiences. And as I say, we're building that list. The list of potential presenters concentrates on the region around the Morro Bay National Marine Sanctuary, the region around the Gulf of Farallones, the region around the Channel Islands, and then some folks in general. While our recommendation to the council was to encourage the city or to have the city sponsor additional public information forums here in Morro Bay, it's possible that the city council may be interested in having additional public information forums in some other regional location. But we'll have to see what comes out of their agenda item discussion. As the committee continues its work and makes contact with a variety of parties with interests relative to national marine sanctuaries, there are some themes, some recurring themes that are brought up by these various folks. In no particular order, long-established commercial and recreational fishing interests have a continuing concern that various sanctuary cultures do not see fishing as having any priority. That's a recurrent theme from commercial and recreational fishing folks. Some commercial and recreational fishing interests believe that marine sanctuaries could be beneficial to the fishing industry after, and not until, this is them talking, a number of unresolved issues are addressed and corrected relative to sanctuaries. And these include the issue of fishery management authority. They would like to see, some of these players would like to see specific current regulatory ambiguities resolved that would require Federal Marine Sanctuary Act reauthorization or amendment. That's a pretty big deal. We're talking about federal law here. with language making clear which federal and or state agency has ultimate authority over all managed marine species. That's one of the ambiguities that we keep hearing about. Sanctuaries get involved, state agencies already exist, other federal agencies already exist, and it's a little hard for some of the fishing folks to keep track of who the players are and who's in charge. The point being that if there are existing federal and state regulatory agencies managing fisheries, marine mammals, and so on, to confirm that those existing agencies have ultimate authority over those interests, as opposed to sanctuaries. Also confirm that sanctuaries have authority over relevant environmental standards that do not, for instance, directly impact regulatory authority for fisheries. So this is a concern as expressed by these industry players that are living with sanctuaries. Secondly, creation of no fishing zones through sanctuary authority. They have concerns about that. Fishing interests feel strongly that fishery management should occur only through the authority of established relevant federal and or state fishery management agencies that are mandated for that purpose and have experience for that purpose. Another concern that we keep hearing about relates to existing protections and resource management. There are generalized concerns concerning the broad and somewhat ambiguous, again, federal authority and power that devolve to national marine sanctuaries. This is especially the case in light of sanctuary designations. If you'll recall, that's capital D designation for sanctuaries. It's part of their establishment process, and it's sort of their authority and their rules moving forward, which theoretically define the scope and authority of a particular sanctuary, but seem to be mutable over time. They change over time without any overriding say by local, regional, or state interests. That happens and seems to happen internally within the sanctuary structure, and local folks, regional folks, and I'm talking about government agencies and so on, don't seem to think that they are able to carry their interests forward successfully in all cases. Various parties feel that prior to the establishment and designation of any new sanctuary, a thorough analysis focused on identifying and quantifying existing environmental protections and management structures is first necessary. So before a sanctuary, for a new sanctuary, for instance, if there was going to be one in Morro Bay, there are people who have lived with both private and public entities who've lived with sanctuaries to say, okay, if there's going to be a new sanctuary somewhere, before it just goes down the federal pathway, part of that process should require a thorough review of what regulatory authorities and management processes are already in place within that area, within that region. Finally, there are concerns regarding sanctuary governance, the structure of sanctuary governance. Coastal harbors, ports, and other local government entities desire significant local oversight and authority and recommend that sanctuary governance structures allow for that. It is reported by some that once a sanctuary is created, the sole local management authority exists with a single person, the superintendent of that sanctuary. Further, it's reported that there's a desire that local communities get input only at the discretion of that superintendent. And the phrase that was used twice with two different people to me is that it creates a possible bureaucratic czar situation. So that point had to do with control. And as I said in the last report, the committee is defining local control as meaning city, county, and state.
Thank you, Ron. Any questions for Laurent or comments? Alan?
I'm going to applaud if it's allowed.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. All right.
Question?
Gene?
Does the council have any idea when they want to have a public forum of some kind?
Having spoken with some council persons, asked that question of some council persons, I'm not aware of any date, nor of any commitment to any location or to the concept yet.
So I'll give you a quick update on that. So as Ron said, they did declare a future agenda item to consider having said forums. And whether or not the city wants to host them, support them, help implement them, that's a discussion that's going to happen. It's on the tentative agenda schedule now for, I can't remember if it's the first April meeting or the second. But that's where it's tentatively sitting right now. So that'll just be a discussion to, hey, do we want to support additional forums or not?
Thank you. Okay. So seeing no more other comments here, let's move on to future agenda items. Neil?
I would like to see an update regarding the crab disaster status and if that is going to affect qualifications, if there's going to be a forgiving period of that qualification.
I hear a second.
I'll second that.
Alan? So we're going to put that on the future agenda item at some point, please. Anyone else?
I would like us to possibly consider the commercial fishing boats on trailers in the city being subject to the screening requirement on private property.
Okay. I have a second on that.
Do you know when the city council is going to look at that?
March 8th.
That's what I wanted to get out.
Mr. Chairman, it isn't just screening. Having read that ordinance, it also the ordinance requires that boats and trailers not rest on the setback.
That's correct. And RVs. I mean,
Alan's talking about boats.
Yeah, boats.
So screening is just part of the story, and the rest of it is, as the ordinance currently reads, you cannot have that trailer sitting on the official setback for whatever your lot zoning is.
Can you explain that to me, what setback means?
Sure. On my residential lot in Morro Bay, I couldn't put any structure or any improvement within 5 feet of the property line on the sides.
So let me ask you a question, Ron. I know where you live. Could you park a boat in your driveway?
Not according to this ordinance,
okay.
No.
All right. Gene?
Yeah, I read the city definition of setbacks, and Ron was correct. It says no structure or improvement within, it could be 20 feet, it could be 10 feet from the front setback. This setback requirement does not address vehicles at all.
So we have a motion for a future agenda item. Do I have a second on that?
Second.
Okay. We have that. So we're going to look at the concept of trying to make an exception for boats, park commercial boats. Is it commercial boats only?
As far as the fishermen concerned, of course, we'd like to see commercial, but I think it should apply. It theoretically should apply to all
boats.
It's
commercial.
It's a fishing community.
Okay. All right. Lynn, are you okay with that?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So those are two items that we want to take a look at. I think I usually talk with Eric, and then we sit down on the Tuesday before and see what is pertinent, and I think we should have some, I think there will be people, and if you're have some free time, Alan, it would probably be advantageous to come to the city council meeting on March 8th and express your opinion, and or someone from your fishing organization, too.
Okay.
Okay, seriously.
Yeah.
Okay, hearing that, do I hear a motion to adjourn? So moved. We have Dana. And second it, and we got Neil. We have any discussion? None? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
guess, right?